This week, the Supreme Court is hearing oral arguments in two big election-related cases. One involves Vermont's limits on campaign spending. The other concerns Texas redistricting. Both cases could have a big impact on upcoming midterm elections. Joining us now to explain is Los Angeles Times legal correspondent David Savage. David, always nice to have you on the program.
Hi, Neil.
So the first case that the court heard today, it's on campaign finance laws in Vermont. Tell us about that.
Well, about 30 years ago in Buckley versus Vallejo, the Supreme Court struck down the spending limits, federal spending limits, upheld contribution limits, but said if you've got $1 million and want to spend the money to run for Congress or whatever, you had a free speech right to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Vermont a few years ago decided to directly challenge that. Howard Dean was then the governor, and he said, you know, money buys access, and we all know it, and we ought to do something about it. And they passed very strict spending limits and very low contribution limits, sort of to directly challenge Buckley versus Vallejo. And to the surprise of some people, they won in a lower court. And so the case was now before the Supreme Court this week. I think it's a sort of blue state, states' rights, that is Vermont, wants to say that we would like to return or sort of preserve small-town democracy. We don't want big money to be driving politics and drive who wins elections, and also drive what the legislators care about. We want our politicians and state officials to, you know, be sort of people who care first about what the ordinary people of the community want. So it was a big test of that. I would say it looks like Vermont's going to lose. The justices, particularly led by John Roberts, were very skeptical of Vermont's claim. Roberts said, are you a really corrupt state? He said to the Attorney General, and if you are a corrupt state, why don't you bring prosecutions against your corrupt politicians? And the Attorney General tried to argue it's not that politicians are taking bribes, it's that the whole system is corrupt, that they get elected by spending a lot of time raising money for campaign contributions, and then when they get in office, they even admitted this in hearings, that their agenda is frequently driven by the groups or corporations that gave them campaign contributions.
And similarly, it would seem that the allowing unlimited spending gives rise to very wealthy politicians. Michael Bloomberg, for example, in New York.
Yes, absolutely. Or in New Jersey last year, they had John Corzine spending about $40 million of his money to win the governorship, and the Republican candidate had $30 million to spend. It's the kind of thing that no ordinary person can run a campaign like that. And so many of the races are driven by expensive negative ads, because if I'm running against you, I assume, well, I need to collect a lot of money, because you may collect a lot of money and run negative ads against me, so I've got to collect a lot of money and run negative ads against you. And you know, you're familiar with it. I think all Americans are familiar with the system. And Vermont really wanted to make a statement to do it differently. If they won, I think some other states would follow suit. By the tone of today's argument, I don't think they're going to win.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned the new Chief Justice, John Roberts, and what he had to say. What about the new Associate Justice, Samuel Alito?
He listened and said very little. He made one comment and didn't really tip his hand. And I think one of the things all of us will be watching for in this opinion is, I think it's pretty certain, as I say, that they're going to strike down the spending limits. The court's been very closely divided on this issue of contribution limits.
Mm-hmm.
The McCain-Feingold Act was upheld by the Supreme Court on a 5-4 vote, with Justice O'Connor casting the fifth vote. If Sam Alito has the free speech view, that is, any restrictions on campaign contributions or spending are First Amendment violations, we could have a new majority, a new 5-member majority that thinks contribution limits are unconstitutional as well.
Let's move on to the other case, in Texas. Basically what's at stake here, I mean, there's raw political power at stake here, but who gets to draw the lines and when they get to draw them?
Yes, that's right. The tradition in American politics is that once every 10 years, the Census Bureau comes out with new census data, and the politicians redraw the districts in their state for Congress and for the state legislature, because people move around and some cities grow and some cities shrink, and you want the districts to be the same size. So you do it once a decade. Texas sort of broke that unofficial tradition by Tom DeLay. Once the Republicans took control of the House and Senate and had the governorship a couple years ago. They went back and redrew the lines, and it worked. There had been a 17-15 Democratic majority in the congressional delegation after 2002, and it turned into 21.
Republicans got a big boost.
Got a big boost, 5 or 6 seats. I think one person actually switched.
Mm-hmm. And the Republicans say that they were just trying to correct an old wrong, that in the days when the legislature and the state house were in Democratic hands, they drew the lines to give themselves maximum advantage. And why shouldn't the Republicans be allowed to do the same thing?
I think that's the best argument on the state side, and it may be the prevailing one. That is, as a procedural matter, there seems something suspicious and wrong about doing a mid-decade gerrymandering, redistricting. On the other hand, if the final result is not that bad, Texas, after all, is a majority Republican state, I think some of the justices, maybe a majority, will say, in a sense, no harm, no foul.
What would the implications of that be? Might other states then jump in and say, well, we can now change our congressional lines and state legislature election lines to maximize the benefit for the party that's in power?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Pennsylvania is a state that leans slightly Democratic. They have districts now that are going to have 12 Republicans, 7 Democrats, probably for the rest of this decade. The Democrats were to take strong hold of the state legislature there, why not go back and change the Pennsylvania lines and say the Democrats could do what the Republicans did in Texas? So, yes, I think other states will follow suit.
And as you mentioned, this has been a tradition to do this every 10 years. Just a tradition? There's no more weight to that than just this is the way we've always done it?
I don't think so, Neil, unless the Supreme Court says this is unconstitutional as an equal protection violation, or they could say, look, the redistricting should be done on new census figures. There's something a little troubling about doing it after 5 or 6 years because you're dealing with old census data. But No, there's no law that says you can't do that right now.
Mm-hmm. And an incredibly politicized process would get even more incredibly politicized.
That's right. It would just be, it's sort of a poisonous partisan process in a lot of states. Already, it is, a number of people said, it's a situation where politicians pick the voters rather than the other way around. The politicians write the lines to ensure themselves, you know, their reelection by giving themselves a favorable district. This will just be more of the same.
And in fact, this has proceeded to such an extent that people think that for the 435 seats in the House of Representatives, maybe 20, maybe 30 at the outside are actually competitive.
Yes, that's right. I think that's one of the real shames of this, is that frequently in many states, it's not a one-party gerrymandering, it's a two-party gerrymandering. If I'm a Republican and you're a Democrat, we can sort of get together and say, why don't we draw a line that gives me a safe district and gives you a safe district, and then there's no competition at re-election time.
Hmm. Interestingly, this was one of the ideas that Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger tried to put through in a referendum in California, I guess, last year, and got stomped.
Yes, I think it's unfortunate that Schwarzenegger apparently overplayed his hand a bit and alienated a lot of people, including the teachers' unions. I think this one, creating a better way to draw district lines, a less partisan way, would have been a good reform.
Hmm. David Savage, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you, Neil.
David Savage, Los Angeles Times legal correspondent, joined us from his office here in Washington, D.C.